I hadn't realized quite how comprehensive the introduction was that I sent in, so it's going to cover the first five slides of my presentation. All right. So I'm Rose Malinowski-Weingartner, and I have nothing to disclose. I work as an evaluator for the Southeastern Pennsylvania Tobacco Control Project. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that work and also about my population data collection work and how they merge together and how we were able to figure out a little bit more about tobacco use and tobacco cessation among adults with behavioral health issues. And in line with the previous definition, when I say behavioral health issues, I'm talking both about adults in recovery and I'm also talking about adults with mental health conditions. So the Southeastern Pennsylvania Tobacco Control Project is one of eight programs in the state of Pennsylvania that does tobacco cessation and prevention and enforcement and all sorts of work around tobacco funded by the State Department of Health with MSA money. We are the blue area in the bottom right of the state, and we're huge. We're actually about 2.7 million residents, and about a third of the state of Pennsylvania lives within Southeastern Pennsylvania, our area here. So the title of the presentation actually had a question mark at the end, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Smoking cessation among behavioral health populations, or smoking cessation among people with behavioral health conditions, there is a question mark there. There's the question about whether or not these are people who will make it a priority to quit smoking, whether or not tobacco use is normative in the settings where they live, where they go for treatment. So one of the sort of stark statistics that I saw when I was looking into this was from the American Legacy Foundation, and they said that about half of the cigarettes smoked, nearly half of the cigarettes smoked in the U.S., are consumed by people with co-occurring psychiatric or addictive disorders. About half of the cigarettes smoked. And we've always known that that smoking is more prevalent among behavioral health populations, but half of the cigarettes smoked. That's huge, and that was really the starting point for this research. We know that in some behavioral health settings, tobacco use is normative. Tobacco can be used as a tool to sort of maintain behavior. Tobacco can be used as a reward system. We're aware of the history of tobacco in many behavioral health settings. And some behavioral health professionals may not view tobacco use as a high priority when there are other concerns at the same time. And behavioral health consumers might not be viewed as motivated to quit smoking. Very often there's the idea that there are bigger fish to fry. So we're going to talk a little bit about making tobacco use a priority or how it already is a priority. So in our region, this is the seven-county region that I showed you highlighted in the bottom left corner of Pennsylvania. We do tobacco cessation programs, and about half of the clients in the tobacco cessation program, about 50% who show up for an eight-session freedom from smoking class, who show up for some one-on-one counseling, about 50% of them have ever been treated for depression. These are classes offered to the general population, and half of the people who show up for a quit smoking class have been treated for depression. So what we wanted to do was to look at the population level and look and see what was going on with smokers with co-occurring conditions across the region. As I was introduced, I divide my time between program evaluation, like the Southeastern Pennsylvania Tobacco Control Project, and population level data collection, like the Community Health Database Household Health Survey. So the survey has been going on since 1983. In 10,000 households every 2 years. It's a random digit dial telephone survey. It's about 22 minutes on the phone, and it pretty much covers health status, access to care, health behaviors. There are a number of questions about tobacco use and similar behaviors, and there are questions, of course, about neighborhood involvement, community factors, crime and violence. There are a number of different questions. It is 22 full minutes on the phone. So working on that and working on this regional tobacco control project, we're able to look at some of the population data and how that plays out and what we see in the bigger population, not just the folks who show up for treatment, but what do we see when we look at everybody. So in our region, and this is the five-county area in the bottom left where we do our survey, we see that 20.3%, about one in five adults, smoke cigarettes either every day or some days. That's 608,000 adults in the area that we serve. We see that 9% of adults are in recovery, and the question asked was, did you once have an alcohol or other drug problem that's no longer a problem in your life? These are folks who we're defining as in recovery, and that's 269,000 adults in the area we surveyed. And we looked at mental health conditions. This is a pretty big basket of a question. We said, Have you ever been diagnosed with any mental health condition, including clinical depression, anxiety disorder, or bipolar disorder? And almost 15% of adults said yes, they'd ever been diagnosed with a mental health condition, and that's 438,000 adults in the area we serve. So we're looking at a large population that might have a variety of needs. Of course, we know they overlap. We're looking at them separately today because this is, one, our preliminary research on this topic, and two, we expect that the Southeastern Pennsylvania Tobacco Control Program will offer treatment in one setting or another, in a recovery setting, in a mental health setting. We expect that there will be separate programming. So in that case, it makes sense to look at these two populations as separate, even though we know there's quite a bit of overlap. So these are our data on smoking. Like I said, about a fifth of adults in Southeastern Pennsylvania smoke cigarettes. And about 53% of adults in recovery smoke cigarettes, and 37% of adults with mental health conditions smoke cigarettes. These are huge differences, and when we pull out, instead of looking at all adults, we look at adults in recovery versus adults not in recovery, and adults with mental health conditions versus adults without mental health conditions, there are statistically significant differences between those populations. We see that people in recovery and people with mental health conditions are significantly more likely to smoke, which is known. That's national data that aligns with everything else we've heard. But what it says is that there's 162,000 smokers with mental health conditions in our region who need help, and that there are 143,000 smokers in recovery in our region who need help. So looking at smokers with mental health conditions, like I said, they're more than twice as likely than smokers without mental health conditions Looking at adults with mental health conditions, they're more than twice as likely than adults without mental health conditions to be smokers. We thought there might be a difference between adults who are receiving treatment for their mental health condition and adults who are not, but we found that they're equally likely to be current smokers. That we were able to rule out. But if adults with a mental health condition are twice as likely to be smokers as adults without, adults in recovery are three times as likely to be smokers as adults not in recovery. So we thought it would be interesting to look into adults in recovery, and we found that they're a little bit different than other adults. Smokers who are in recovery are more likely to smoke only on some days. They're more than twice as likely to smoke only on some days rather than every day. You picture a smoker lighting up a cigarette every, you know, hour or so. But smokers in recovery smoke a little bit different. We also find that they're more likely to smoke more cigarettes, which seems counterintuitive with the stat above it. But we find that smokers in recovery are more likely than other smokers to smoke a pack or more per day. So we looked at tobacco use exposure at home because who you're around, your exposures, the social norms in your life could be a huge factor in whether or not you're smoking cigarettes. So we asked people whether or not someone else in their home, themselves or someone else in their home, smoked indoors. So a huge number of adults are exposed to tobacco smoke at home. Among all adults, it's about 14%. But among adults in recovery, it's about 30%. 30% of adults who once had a problem with alcohol or other drugs are exposed to tobacco smoke in their own home. And more than one in five adults with a mental health condition is exposed to tobacco smoke at home. And again, these are statistically significant differences between populations who are not in recovery or do not have a mental health condition. So we know that adults with behavioral health issues, whether it be addiction or mental health conditions, are more likely to smoke and more likely to be exposed to smoke at home than adults without behavioral health issues. This kind of aligns with national data. This isn't news. So what about when they quit smoking? We know that these are the people who are sort of the holdouts, the ones who are still smoking cigarettes. As tobacco use has sort of leveled off, and it's about 20%, we haven't seen that much change in that number in the last 10 years. You know, there's this belief that it's the behavioral health population who's holding on. So what happens with quitting with that population? We asked adult smokers if they'd tried to quit smoking in the past year, and most of them had, and this is what we've seen for years. About 58% of adults who smoke had tried to quit smoking during the past year. And among adults in recovery, it was about the same, about 59%. But among adults with mental health conditions, 70% of smokers with mental health conditions had tried to quit smoking in the past year. So that's a big difference. But what we see here is that, one, adults with mental health conditions are more likely to try to quit, and two, smokers in recovery are not unreachable. They're as likely to try to quit as smokers not in recovery. So we ask them how they tried to quit. Last time you tried to quit smoking, what did you use to quit smoking? How did you try? We know that most people who try to quit smoking try to quit cold turkey, and that was no different in this population. We saw that 61% of all smokers in southeastern Pennsylvania tried to quit without using any support, without using NRT, without a support group, without tobacco cessation pharmaceuticals or anything. But what was interesting is that we saw that it was less likely among these high-risk populations that we're concerned about right now. Among behavioral health populations, about 50%, a little more than 50% of adults in those populations who had tried to quit smoking in the past year tried without help. The others tried with help. So it's of note that these are people who are trying and they're using the tools that we know work to help them quit. We looked at adults who use nicotine replacement therapy. About 1 in 5 smokers who tried to quit in the past year used NRT when they tried. Among adults in recovery, it's about 30%. And among smokers with mental health conditions, it's about 25%. So we see that these people are more likely to be, again, using the tools that we know are effective to quit, and yet still more likely to remain smokers. So smokers with behavioral health issues in our region are as likely or more likely than other smokers who have tried to quit. And they're more likely to use NRT to try to quit, and less likely to quit cold turkey. That's the story of their quit attempts. That's the story of adults both in recovery and adults with mental health conditions and how they're trying to quit smoking. One, they're trying to quit more than everyone else, and two, very often they're using the right tools. So what about actual quits? We looked at people who were former smokers. Adults with mental health conditions look like they quit smoking just like adults without mental health conditions. So people who are former smokers, whether they do or do not have a mental health condition, pretty much look the same. Among former smokers in southeastern Pennsylvania, most of them quit cold turkey, and we know that. And former smokers, 2/3 of them quit more than 10 years ago. You know, many more quit even longer ago when these pharmaceuticals or NRT were less available. But we see that adults with mental health conditions and adults without mental health conditions are as likely to have quit cold turkey. Same with NRT. About 8% of adults with or without mental health conditions used NRT when they did quit smoking. And about 4% of adults with or without mental health conditions use tobacco cessation pharmaceuticals like Chantix and Zyban when they quit smoking. So we don't see a difference. We only see a difference in actual quits, right? We see that the intent is there, we see the tools are there, but still we see that adults with mental health conditions are more likely to remain smokers. So adults in recovery are more likely to have used TCP or NRT to quit. So they're more likely to use the patch, Zyban, Chantix. We looked at adults in recovery who are former smokers. 70% or 71% of adults in recovery tried to quit cold turkey last time they tried to quit, compared to adults who aren't in recovery who tried to quit in the past year, or is 83%. So that's a big difference. That's a population who is not trying to go it alone, who's not trying to quit unsupported. And we see the same thing with Chantix and Zyban, the TCP pharmaceuticals we ask about. About 3 times as likely, adults in recovery are about 3 times as likely to use Chantix or Zyban than adults not in recovery when they try to quit smoking. And adults in recovery are about 2x as likely to use NRT than adults not in recovery. And this is, again, among adults who've tried to quit smoking during the past year. So this is huge. There's about 112,000 adults with mental health conditions who tried to quit smoking in the past year in our region that we serve, and about 84,000 adults in recovery who've tried to quit smoking during the past year. So in summary, despite commonly held beliefs, many adults with behavioral health issues are eager to quit smoking, and many have already quit long term. We know that these are folks who have the same intention to quit or more as adults without behavioral health issues. We know that they're as likely or more likely to use the tools that we know work. So I think that we think about approaches to tobacco dependency treatment for smokers in recovery and smokers with mental health conditions, maybe approach the two differently because there were those differences we saw in the use of pharmaceuticals. But resources should be provided for this. There should be programming available for everyone, regardless of what kind of facility they're in or visit, because we see that this is a population that's looking to quit smoking. And we know that this is a population with a shorter lifespan than the population on a whole. And we know that this is a population that is holding on, still remains smokers, but wants to quit. And that's the important part, is that they want to quit. So here's my contact information, and I gave you a lot of stats there, but I have some handouts up here if you want to take the stats home with you and look at them harder. Thank you.